give you a little bit of information, as much as I'm able to, about some of the history of camping, just maybe a little 3 or 4 minutes. One of the things that you may not know is that camping as we know it today in the United States, especially Bible camping, is a unique feature of America, of the American culture. It started here, it is developed here, and is uniquely an American phenomenon. Until just recently, there have been camping kinds of programs starting in other countries, such as Japan, India, European and the African continents, also are now beginning their camping programs that are somewhat in the infancy stage compared to what the Americas have experienced in the way of camping. But how did they start here? There's probably as many ways as camps have started, and the facilities and the land and all that, as there are camps. But I think basically they started with the idea that there was seen some value in the experience of getting away, of going apart from the community. A pastor, perhaps, took a few young people on a camping trip. Within the camping experience that they had, there was perhaps some Bible study, some morning and evening worship, and a concentration on some Bible study and discussion of Scripture during this time that they were together. And during that time, a community was formed, and people grew. And as the word spread about the value of this kind of experience, and as people saw the value for youth, and as adults saw the value of having a place apart in the summer for revivals or for having inspiring speakers come to talk to them, the purchase of land was thought about and was investigated. Or people looked into perhaps other people who were interested in this kind of an idea, who owned land like on lakefronts or specific portions of property, who would be willing to donate that land or give it to an organization who would use it strictly for Christian purposes. When land was found, usually volunteers would help build some minimum facility for basic usage in the summer, perhaps simply a small building which was used as a kitchen and some toilet facilities. As the interest and participation grew, more facilities were necessary. And as buildings were built and as cottages and cabins were built, it required more maintenance and more supervision. Full-time people were needed to either maintain or develop the program. And within the last 25 or 30 years, a lot of organizations have hired people who call themselves directors. Directors who take on the responsibility of some fundraising and communication and PR work and that kind of thing, so that these camps have a facility that is taken care of. Most of these people weren't necessarily called directors as much as they were called camp managers to take care of the property. But as the interest continued to grow, and as programs became more and more part of the church program, full-time people were hired to direct camps. First, directors came with, and the facility was there for pastors to come with their children, with their own counselors. And then the pastors pretty much had control of all the program. They taught. They led the Bible studies. They led the singing. They had a major portion of teaching responsibility. And the camp was mainly a facility and served the congregations that way. But as programs grew and as pastors became more and more busy with that kind of program, there was a need for more kinds of staff at camp, support staff, then the development of having counselors available in the summer, college-age people and high school-age people who would be there to supervise cabin groups of children. But primarily pastors and clergy were still in charge of the leadership in Bible study. Again, there was a transition about 20 years ago into more of a counselor-led Bible study where the pastor came along with the group but had less responsibility as far as teaching. And that shifted again and again to where finally the pastor came along just to kind of be there. I think now the shift has been back toward a more involvement of the pastor and a connection with the congregation. And that's been a real interesting transition too. A lot of what camps are doing now in this whole history is diversifying, in the recent past anyway, has been a tremendous amount of diversity, serving a lot of different types of groups, going into a lot of different directions. But now, in this day and age, there has been more of a specialization. I think because of two things. One, especially in the Lutheran Church, is the economics and then the merger that's coming. In northern Minnesota, I believe there's something like 25 to 30 camps in that northern Minnesota area that has LC or ALC connections. So what are you going to do with 30 camps all competing for the same campers? I think there is a move toward a specialization, which needs to happen. Camping is unique, and camp directors are unique too, as we all know. Some people live with camp directors, as Kim has, and she has a unique kind of perspective of camping, as far as being a daughter of a camp director and working at a camp as a staff person.
I think I'll start off by saying, right now I'm really sour on camping, outdoor ministries. I think it's falling apart right now in the United States. The support it's getting, it has, the support from the churches is declining, I think. Parents don't send their kids to camp every summer. It's not a expected thing. It used to be. I'll start from a staff position. Working at a summer camp is really fun. It's an experience. You get to meet many other, your other staff members. You get to be close to them. Very good friendships are formed. You meet wonderful kids. You get to play with them, teach them, sing songs. You teach them about the outdoors. Just show them the outdoors, not only even the teaching. That's neat. That's really neat. I think camping is important. I really do. Where shall I go? I think there are a lot of things that need to be done in terms of educating the church that there are camps around them. The churches need to become involved. And the people need to become involved, too. As a camp participant, as a kid, I think they're very fun. It is a place where you're free to worship every day. You don't get that in school. You have role members, and I think that's role leaders. That's very important to kids nowadays. They come and they're able to idealize their counselor for a week, and that's fine. I think that's very good. It's a time away from them for their parents. That's fine.
Parents too.
Yeah. No, they're winter time too.
Holiday time. Do you ever have camps during holiday sessions? You know, children get 2 weeks vacations from school for Easter and for Christmas. Do you have camps for those times too?
Yeah, I think that's right. The winter camps, or retreats more commonly called, I think, are just that, I think, a retreat, a time away. That's very important, I think, too.
Are you talking about camps only for children?
No. I think that's important. The adult, I know, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about specific camp programs, but I'm going to concentrate now is maybe sharing a little bit about our own experience of what his camp has meant to us and our personal. I know for me, I guess I don't see myself as being unusual in my camp experience, yet I wouldn't be here at Holden probably unless I would have had a specific kind of camp experience back when I was back in 1969, or was it 69? In a way, the camp experience allowed me to see some things that I would not have seen any other way. Let me explain a little bit of that kind of history and why it has meant so much to me. I came from a Midwestern town, a small Midwestern town, Minnesota. Very typical, church every Sunday. We're very involved in the church. We went religiously, as they say. Baptism when I was a child, confirmation, Luther League. But then I went off to college, and there was not that kind of structure to help me maintain that kind of the values that were my parents, I felt. I came into a whole different realm of values. And it was real difficult to sort through all that. And I didn't see, I guess I just assumed that the values that I was going to live by were just kind of osmosized from my parents, and that somehow that's what was supposed to happen, and that's what I would get. Only that didn't happen. I drifted around a lot, did a lot of different things, nothing very terrible, but just typical acting out rebellious behavior for a college student, I think. And that happened all the way through when I was in the military and after I left the military. But there came a time when a woman youth worker at a Lutheran church invited me to be a chaperone along with a group that was going out to Outlaw Ranch in South Dakota. I went, we got there, and it was a unique experience of living in a community of people who called themselves Christians, who talked about it, attempted to live it out, spent time in prayer, spent time in Bible study. I don't remember what the Bible studies were about. I don't remember specifically what people said, but I still remember the feeling and the impact, about the last half of the week. The only thing that I was able to think that last half of the week was, God does exist here. He really does exist here. And if he exists here, then also God exists outside of this place too. And that was kind of a beginning again of a embracing what my parents had taught, what the church had taught, all those kinds of things that were in my history but I abandoned and rebelled against. I became interested enough at that point to continue the investigation and to continue to try to be in that community of people. Came back and looked for a position where I could work at a camp. Found that and was able to work for a year with a camp that was just beginning in Minnesota. Worked for a number of years in a drop-in counseling center in Rochester, but always kept my contact with camps all around. Visited them. Talk with people about that. Worked in camps in Washington and Oregon, in Indiana. Had a strong desire to be within that ministry, and had finally had a chance to be a full-time director of a camp in North Dakota called Red Willow. It was really kind of a paradoxical experience. You always go into a position, I think, ignorant, and I knew I was. But I wanted to be there, and I wanted to struggle with what was going on. I think one of the things that I learned was that camp is almost exclusively relationship. That's what makes the impact. I think back of my camping experiences at to the camps that I've been at, that I've directed. I think back to the experience I had as a camper or as a chaperone, and I immediately think of people and the relationships I had and the experience that we had together. And there was a sense of something beyond us that was there too. And I guess I call that God, Jesus Christ. And there was a learning process that went on through all that. For you too, I'm sure that perhaps camping means something. Well, that can be a positive thing, that can be a negative thing. I think perhaps we need to hear too. Does anybody else had a similar, or maybe some other people had some negative experiences too? We don't want to always concentrate on the positive, but perhaps there's some other experiences too.
I had a really, I went to Flathead Lutheran Bible Camp in Montana for about four consecutive summers, and I always, and probably to this day, I'd like to be the director of that camp. What was refreshing to me as a junior high or confirmand or whatever was that it was really, nowhere else had I seen or experienced a lifestyle which was at all or at least partly shaped by belief system, where there was constant worship, well not constant, but there was a lot more than I'd ever experienced before, that it really was part of our play, it was part of our work, it was part of our study, our sleep, our eating, everything centered around Christ. And that was very different for me. And it was very different for me to be able to be free with that, with other people. It was just good fellowship. And I got my first kiss there.
Yeah. When you come to a church camp compared to other camps are very put in squares and you have to do this at that point. But in a Christian camp, you are not forced to do anything. You can come.
I don't know if that's
I mean, you didn't have to come to eat. You didn't have to. Go and learn.
I think maybe that's true with Holden, but it may not be true with other camping programs. No.
Well, I've been to many other Christian camps since Holden, and I found the same thing, that you did not have to.
But you went as
an
adult.
You were encouraged.
You went as an adult, not as a child.
Right, as an adult, yes.
Family camping is a lot different than youth camping. Kind of put that in perspective.
Around the world, I found, and it was my privilege. Single camps are now in the United States a multitude of Christian single camps, and that's where I have been, other than Logan.
Anybody else, Lord Sheridan?
What kind of camps did you go to? I've been to camps.
Yes, Pat.
Well, it's interesting. I'm a PK, he's a preacher's kid, but I don't remember going to church camps. I had one experience of going to church camp, which was a really negative experience for me. That's why I never wanted to do that. I went to a camp that was in a different geographical place from where I lived, and I didn't have any friends there. And it was at that time when you are, you know, a teenager and get or junior high age, and the bonding stuff is really important. And it didn't happen for me that week at the camp. It was just, so it was, and I did have to do a whole lot of stuff that I didn't want to do. Including getting up in front of people. So I just really disliked that experience intensely. And associated that with the church. So for me, the most pleasurable experiences I had at camps were non-Christian camps, were music camps, where I had a skill that I shared with other people, and we were together working on something. I went to a non-Christian camp in Minnesota, which for me was a whole new cultural experience. It's called Camp Holiday up near Maryland. And I learned about canoes and lakes and saunas and all kinds of things, which I never...
So your experience was not Well, in a Christian camp, per
well,
se.
Well, my first experience was in a Christian camp. It was a junior high school.
By non-Christian, you mean it just doesn't call itself Christian?
Yeah, it wasn't. The emphasis was excluded. On worship.
Yes, Vince.
Yeah, I only went to camp once, and but it was a Boy Scout camp, so it was not a Christian camp. But I was in a Mormon Boy Scout troop, which I loved. And the thing, one of the things I really enjoyed about camp was we didn't have that regular worship and do testimonies and things like that. Which a junior high age for me was just a fabulous experience. I really enjoyed it a lot. I have tremendously fond feelings towards my Mormon friends in that group and that troop. So it was kind of a good experience for me.
I think the counselors were big role models, and still, I remember things like the way they used to dress, or one of them used to carry the carving knife or something, and I just, things like that made a big impression, and I wanted to.
You carried the
carving knife. I remember.
This is interesting because there's, you know, the question that we asked in the beginning, do we need Christian camps? And what does make it distinctive? Which is really a crucial question. And you think in those terms, within your experience, is there something distinctive about a Christian camp? If there is not, from other camping kinds of experiences, if the Christian church, Lutherans included in that, is focusing in on duplicating the kind of experience you can get at a Boy Scout camp, you can get at a sports camp, or music camp, or whatever, arts camp, language camp, is it really worth having all the money, people, time, and energy invested in a Christian camp? If it's not distinctive, in what ways is it?
Are you talking denominational Christian, or the Y and the YWCA?
I think.
Camp,
yeah.
Places.
Well, I guess
I would. To what extent they're really worshiping camps, or if they're more recreational? I've never been to one.
Can I share with you one experience I've had?
Does it have to do with why it's distinctive?
Mm-hmm. The Christian camp, Camp Cross. Washington is our Episcopal Christian camp, and the children go, and I was asked to go for a three-day counselor at that camp. The one thing that was most valuable in that camp was that our bishop made sure that he came and visited with the children in camp, and also clergy were there, and they learned the clergy and the Word of God in the outdoors without the liturgical clothing, without old pomp and circumstance they found in the church itself, whichever theirs was. It became very valuable to them, and they began to know that clergy are people, ordinary people who love God, and they in turn turned around and they found a great deal of love. I found the children that I took care of in the cabin that I was to be in charge of at the camp experience that particular year. When the bishop came, they were all so very, what's it like to be around the bishop? Because we don't see the bishop that often. I think church camps are very important for us to learn how we should put and what we should do, how God is on a pedestal. Is God to be on a pedestal that we're not allowed to touch, talk about, or anything else, because you go to school, and you're not allowed to pray at school. But you can go and you can learn so much more, and I think compared to just the music camp and the other camps, there's a great deal of importance in having Christian ones so we learn. And then they can turn to their own clergy and say, Father, would you help us understand what they're
So it's relational. More of a relational kind of
context. And their emotions, again, are able to, they can cry. They can be helped by that clergy and know he's someone who has love in him, just like dad and mom and brother and sister, and tell their problems to him too.
Well, you said you're ignorant something, I think, when you talk about relations being very important. But I think there are possibly a couple of things going on. I think there's something that's just the camping experience, whether it's church affiliated or music affiliated or whatever, brings certain intensity of relationships, and that kind of experience is probably certainly not unique to church-related camps. One of the things I think has a really important value, especially the youth-oriented ones, is taking people who oftentimes don't have any place in the church in the common weekly life of the church, and they are now integrated fully into the church in a way where they know that they have some place and some value. And then if we can then translate that experience back into the congregational life, especially for youth, I think, but also like for those who are singles and people who traditionally are not at the center of the church life, I think that sort of has a real valuable function. I know a lot, you know, you talk to a lot of teenagers or young adults who went to camp and really that was the time when they really got turned on to their faith in some way, were able to somehow translate that back into, or is it just hadn't been reached before?
Thank you. That's really important. I think a lot of times we think of camping with really a limited kind of view of what it is. Typical camp would be facility that serves junior high or younger age kids, maybe some high school, maybe 1 week shots during the summer. And the outdoor ministries has expanded tremendously in the last 10 years, 15 years, into a lot of different kinds of things. And I'm sure I was asking Linda at noon to, you know, what her experience has been in camping, and she shared some stuff, and some other people shared too. But what really is happening within the camping programs around that? And maybe that would give us a little bit more vision of what is happening and what kinds of things are being, who is being ministered to, like Spencer, maybe some of these groups that don't get attention in a regular kind of congregation do get attention and needs are being met. Linda, would you be willing to share some of the things that happen in your congregation?
Well, Community Church was the first church in Longview, which is the planned city, and everything was planned by R.A. Long. For miles around. But they do have, and have had for I don't know how many years, many camps for children of various ages, camps for singles, camps for couples, camps for family. I never have gone because I haven't belonged to community that long because we were far away from it. And I had other duties. But now that I know something about it, now that I have time to think next summer, I'll be going somewhere.
You mentioned some things about sending some people down into Mexico to Tijuana
there seems to be a big orphanage down there. And the young people who had also quite a few adults go along. Lived on this side, just over the border. They would go every day into Tijuana, where this orphanage was, and play with the kids and see that they got food and did little services for them. And they came back there with kids, of course. Then they had a delegation go to Peru 2 years to a certain place that needed buildings built. They had the leading architect of Longview in that area go along. There were adults and there were teenagers, and they had marvelous experiences. They went down with another group of them to Mississippi, to a black community. Did some building there, helped them get a little church going, things like that.
Some of the areas that you might not realize camping and outdoor ministries that are getting into, those are kind of summer kinds of activities. Work kinds of things where a group of people get together, take a bus or some kind of transportation, go somewhere and offer their services in a ministry, building buildings, taking care of, I think there's a lot of things going on in the eastern United States in that relation with poor people over there in south, with the poor black people down in the south, or
migrant farms,
all kinds of stuff like that are going on. A lot of these, not all, a lot of these are being organized through the camping organization that has the network and the information so that information can be distributed and these plans can be made.
Dean, I want to say a little while ago when you said, ask how it was all started. I never went to a Chautauqua myself because I didn't live in an area where they were, and I was a little too young, but my husband did. They went as a family in a wagon, took the boat parkway to Portland, and they camped out. That was their camping experience. And Chautauqua had many, many educational and fun things. The girls saw some men from Hawaii playing beautiful stuff. She never quit talking about it. You heard Melba, who was, I think, from Australia, a soprano singer that people don't ever hear about now. And that's another thing he enjoyed so much. And he was just a young teenager. But Billy Sunday was one of the people who appeared at Chautauqua's and had debates of the various, maybe even Brian. An educational thing
as well as
a fun thing.
And that's real important now too, I think, in recent history, especially at Holman here. That's probably one of the main focuses here. People come here to talk about issues. People come here to talk about lifestyles and things that are current, having to do with politics and all that. That is not something outside of the church, outside of ministry. Some of the new things that are happening, maybe you're aware of those in your area too, but just to fill you in a little bit on what I know, environmental education seems to be probably one of the newer kinds of things that are happening in the camping area, where camps are serving high school and grade school age children, providing a facility and teachers for environmental education. That's an exciting new program. It's probably the most 10 years old. Retreating in the wintertime has been talked about. Families, single parents, youth, church council, senior citizens, intergenerational, all over the place like that. Marriage encounter kinds of things. Theme and issue retreats. All those things are happening. And the summer kinds of programs, too, are as varied in ministry as you can imagine. Everything from working with delinquent teenagers to working with handicapped people, mentally, physically, emotionally handicapped people.
Also, camps that are different, interracial.
Yeah, inner city kinds of experiences can be experienced where you bring in.
We also
some
have
people.
Different country relationships too. Mm-hmm. In Spokane, we have our sister city missionary in Japan. Every other year, we are either in Japan, Girl Scout wise, or they are in Spokane. This year, our Japanese Girl Scouts will come back to Spokane. They came to Spokane and they built for us a beautiful community area, and they come back to take care of it. We go to Nishinomiya where we went and gave our American plot, per se, over there. And we go back and take care of it. And it's cultural learning between the two. So you have the Japanese and the American.
And that's probably one of the newer areas that I know a camp in Wisconsin that's doing this right now is having an international village, having an African village and an Indian village, where it allows high school and junior high people to experience a cross-cultural kind of experience, not limiting our faith to an Americanized version of what the gospel is all about, but bringing in international students from the University of Minnesota. They brought in Indian and African students to have the camper be able to talk to a person who is a Muslim, to talk to a person who is a Christian in India or a Christian in Africa, have a first-hand experience of it. There's some really exciting kinds of things happening in that area. Maybe you know some other areas, Pat.
Last summer was the first in an experiment, I think, in international camping, where the Lutheran Church in Zimbabwe invited the Lutheran churches in the United States to send a delegation of young skilled people to work on two of the farms that were part of the reconstruction effort in developing that nation after the their winning of their independence. And National Campus Ministry staff, Lutheran World Ministries, Lutheran World Relief, Canadian World Relief, there was one other, I can't remember, together pooled money and identified 24 Canadian and American college-age students with specific backgrounds or skills in farming or farming-related areas who went and spent a month on these two farms working side by side with their Zimbabwean counterparts, not as a work camp to do something for them as much as to be in solidarity with them in their reconstruction effort and to bring back the story of what they were doing to the United States. Part of the commitment to go was the willingness to raise some money from local congregations and come back and tell the story of what they had seen and heard and how they had worked with the church there and the young people.
That's exciting.
And it was really neat
stuff.
It took place against the backdrop of some tensions in Zimbabwe, which had led to the disappearance of some young people from Seattle. So there was some difficulties. They elected finally not to go to one. They were supposed to go to three different farms, and they elected finally to go to two of them. But it was a very, very good experience for them.
Those folks were here.
Any of the rest of you know of special kinds of programming and things that are going on that would broaden our vision of what Outdoor Ministries is going on? Maybe in your area, maybe there's some of the camps that you've been.
Yeah, the Christian.
Well, yeah, talk about that. Now, that is a unit.
I've been on it for a meeting, so we bounced around while it was tied up, but others have
the Christian is a boat.
And it would take 28, I believe, a relative had done cooking down there. And they use it for a variety of things. One is like a fishing trip. That's for men and all. But then, otherwise, it's signed up very readily for youth groups or short trips. It makes usually one trip to Alaska for these men again. Otherwise, they can have it for a weekend or a few days. It's expensive, obviously. I kept thinking about that on the other camps, too. We went to camps as kids, just had a grand time, didn't want to go back home, and our kids went. But then they got more and more expensive, but that got balanced off. I'm on this subject. Got balanced off. By the church subsidizing part of it. There's a pastor who's keen about camping, but in a congregation that isn't, I can see problems there with kids being left out, even if they're interested, you know, just money-wise, because camping gets expensive. It's done well.
It does. I think some of the new trends in camping that you will be seeing have to do with just that, the economic aspect of running a camp. Most of the camping facility, I don't know what whole the village is going to value that, but I suppose anywhere from even a small camp with small amounts of buildings and property and kind of a minimum amount can run you anywhere from, you know, $100,000 all the way up to millions of dollars wrapped up, you know, money-wise, in facility and buildings and land. That probably is going to not continue. I mean, to buy a facility, the land, and all this just is almost impossible.
Most of the camping associations who own this multi-$1,000 land piece are broke.
They're not profit-making organizations.
They are very broke. Yeah.
But they're profit-making in a different way, not money.
Right.
But
within our culture, you have to look at that in order to survive. And I think camps, kind of projecting in the future a little bit, my own vision, I don't know if it's valid or not. Maybe I'm a little pessimistic about this morning. I don't know. But I think that there is some hope, I think, in that we have been such a land-conscious and building-conscious people that we can't think of anything outside of a physical structure or a physical piece of land having to do with ministry. Think of our churches, for instance. A mission congregation starts and they start meeting in a gymnasium or some available building in the community. The first thing after they get organized and people get together is, what do we want to do? We want to build a building. So immediately they're saddled with how much money, maybe $200,000 or $300,000 kinds of burden, when they probably could share facilities with who? With the facility that they're using and that. I think camping is in the same boat right now. We can't even hardly maintain the cost of the present facilities that we do have in camping.
There even is day camping for little children.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a good example of what I'm talking about.
There's a building where, that's there. And
mm-hmm. Where a camp provides that service. They hire a staff for the summertime, maybe two or three or four people, and they use the camp as a base of operation. They go out from that base and minister to anywhere from 100 to 200 miles surrounding them. They don't need a building in that community to minister.
But you have your national forest. That's
right,
what
you have parks, national forest, all those are available.
We go and sign up on a sheet of just, may we have the time for that campground, and we all go and we get all the equipment from everyone we know has that type of equipment. Being Girl Scouts, we all pool through the city, take all the camp gear, take all the kids, and we go camping. We took our children to our camp head base in Mexico. And at the cabana there, you can go. We took with us to Mexico. We went there to share what we have in America with Mexico, products that they don't have, that they'd like to have. We shared with them. They wanted more than anything in the world. They wanted just a little tiny piece of candy. So all the children went throughout our city, took a piece of candy, and those children in Mexico sent us back with little messages that were beautiful little pieces of scripture of all things. We brought it back with us and we made the most gorgeous flag you've ever seen of little pieces, little strips of paper that was scripture. And everybody who came to visit us in the city of Spokane had to peel off one piece of that scripture, take it home with them, read it, and remember Mexico. Because the cabana is in Mexico City, in Mexico. We have 5 Girl Scout wives throughout the world. In India, Great Britain, Switzerland, Japan, Mexico, America.
I think now we're trying to talk about Christian camping. Now.
But that you continually will get the Christian-oriented in the Girl Scout.
I think what your point is made is that you don't necessarily have to have a building or a piece
right.
of land to do programming, to do ministry, to do Christian ministry. And that's a real luxury right now.
Another factor is that a lot of the responsibility goes right back to the congregations themselves, because it depends on your geographical area. In the Midwest, camping is a real big thing, because the churches emphasize it so much. In the time that I've been out here, I have heard zero about camping. You know, and camping is not emphasized at all from the experience that I've had while I've been here. And I think a lot of responsibility falls back on the congregations and how much they themselves emphasize camping amongst their parishioners and encourage them to participate in camping.
We had the office staff help out just very realistically and had funds by being available. This was like during one of the Boeing strikes. And even then, some of the engineers' kids couldn't go because Dad had been laid off. And those of us who wanted to could give money for one person to go to camp. And they didn't know who'd given it. So you could get a scholarship, I guess it's called. And lots of that was done. But there again, Laverne Nelson is sold on camping. But it was one way to get around the problem and make it available for this expensive setup.
From your perspective, from coming from congregations or communities outside of Holden Village, what function does camp, in your own mind, serve within the church?
I
kids in a city church, maybe like in one Sunday school class, might of only 6 or 8 kids might come from 4 or 5 different schools. So they aren't a very solid group to start with. They're scattered from their events happening. So they needed that just to get to know each other and study together, be together and all. Whether it's a weekend spent in the church and they're having a retreat right there, or whether it's going to camp, you know, and planning it and all.
But it also
served that purpose.
It gives them the freedom from the liturgy and the freedom to know God personally. The liturgy in the church, you must do at camp, church camp. You have freedom from liturgy per se, the books and so forth in your hands, and having to follow the liturgy and go there and be free to know God, but have someone there to teach the Word of God.
I think a role model is what you're talking about, probably. I guess for me, the important thing was, I guess we're getting off the subject, but to get back, to the new kinds of things that are happening, to the new kinds of programs that are that need to happen, in the sense where there's some possibilities for some new areas, in the sense where there's some possibilities for some new programs within within camping that you're connected with, that you know about. What is happening in your area? Do you know?
One of our pastors had an idea. This goes a long ways. For a confirmation study class, and what he would like to do is take this group of 10 kids or whatever and go for 6 weeks and live together, study, you know, just really learn how it is to get along. It's probably not realistic, you know, I mean, getting that much time, but, you know, who knows? That was a dream he had. Instead of a little dab each week, and you could tolerate each other for that long, but boy, if you live together, you really develop some good relationships.
Things. 3 weeks long. Have you been to those camps, Kirsten?
I've been once as a child, and I've been twice to counseling.
What are they like? Are they?
They are a bit different. I think we don't do so many things in Bible study with them. We have our services, we have our worship, we have our Christian songs. But it is more of a treat than a study camp. And also we have different ages together. I mean, this very one I went to, we went to an island with a group of 80 kids. And we lived there together for 3 weeks, and these kids were from 5 to 15 years of age. And so you have your own community there, and of course you speak about it. But it is more of a treat than a and it's the same thing, I think, for all of your camps. That's the relations of the most important thing, which are built in there.
Thank you.
I don't know that there need to be any relations in camping. It seems to me the important thing is that people experience community other than just their kind of. That was my first experience of any kind of a community other than just my family and cousins at Christmas time and holidays. It was a couple of summers at a boys club from Chicago, and it was wonderful because it was my first exposure to people of different colors and backgrounds. And I learned a lot. So I don't think the innovation is necessary except just bringing people together.
Well, you have a security group, and in a Christian camp, you're away from language per se that you're around in schools that is very uncolorful, very unquiet about language. Really.
Well,
at least you are you're programmed a little more to the more kindly ways of speaking the English language. And that, I think, is one of the neatest things that I found and learned from children who go to a church camp when they come home. They talk differently because they've learned God loves, and He loves what you say as well as what you do. And they've learned to speak better, you know, and kinder, and those words are diminished more so. I think that's a very valuable thing in this world today, because words can cut you so deep. It hurts painfully. You know, that's something I noticed from the children coming home.
I'm going to dive in here. To me, this is all seeming a little pat. I'm very, I guess I could be called an expert on the problems in church camping. I know all what they are. here I go. I guess, first we talk about, the church camping is broke. The program in Washington is falling, it's basically dead. The program in Oregon is selling their primary site. They are very much so out of money. They had to log it, and now they're selling it. We talk about not having camping as a piece of land, and I think that's a very good idea, only it presents a lot of problems. People have gone to these camps since they were 12. A lot of people are extremely attached to the sites. You try and sell a campsite and you have severe problems with PR. There's no way you can do it. It takes you a few years. It takes you a few years and then you lose a fourth of the following you had because they don't like it. I also see where different congregations are very much so, this is their camp. You try, there are, like Dean said, there are how many camps in northern Minnesota?
Lots.
28? We have that problem in Washington too. There are camps all over. You try and get them organized so they can effectively and financially, stably, wisely, conscientiously serve the people that are there. That's hard to do. Everyone is attached to their own sites. They want it at their site. I guess I see it as a lot of problems in the camping. I don't think it's so easy.
In the organization?
Yeah. The church support is not really there.
To find the parents in the churches feel okay if it gets rid of the kids for the week, let's send them off to camp? Or do you feel that a church camp by the congregational people turn and say, this would be a marvelous opportunity for the children of our church to grow and learn the Word of God and associate with God more in His environment, God's environment, of the natures of the world?
I don't think that's as important anymore. The children, it's not a rare case for kids to get out of the week, to get out of the house for a week. They do that in school and environmental ed. Almost every school district has that. Sports camps, everything. You belong to a high school sports team, you go to sports camp. It's nearly required. They don't have the pressure to get out of the house. They don't need to. The children.
Working,
yeah.
So even that.
It's not
there's
stressed
almost
as much.
More of an emphasis for older phrases. An emphasis on families being together here, because it's so rare back in the community when all of them are at the same meal together at the same time. Holden offers that kind of program where families have a chance to be together and experience things together for a time.
We have so many people with lake homes, river homes, or whatever, you know, and they just scatter. You can't get them on the 4th of July and on September, and that cuts into where you'd like to have some kind of family camps.
Who do you think dominates church camps most of all? Families? Children?
I think
dogs?
There's a,
or what?
there's been a shift, I think, in recent years. Traditionally, camps have been thought of as places for youth to go. And now with the needs that are arising, there's a lot more need for family kind of camping, and specialty camping, along with youth camping, as well as year-round retreats and things like that. There's a tremendous need for camps to change, I think.
Glendale used to send a lot of people, I don't know about the last few years, and they did it on an extremely economical basis. They figured out their own curve and they went camped out, you know, little trailers, tents, or whatever. But they got crowds coming. The several years we saw them, I believe they were.
Question. Go ahead.
That's it.
The question I have is if the camps are broke, which of course I fully realize they are, because even from where I'm from, in the Midwest, all the camps are hurting. The thing that I did not hear very often was nobody came to us and simply told us, we are broke. We are in financial trouble. If we do not get support from our congregations, then we are going to fold or go under or be operating in the red. You know, we never had people coming. Maybe that's too hard. Maybe that's too blunt. Maybe that's too hard and fast. Maybe that's too much for. Maybe that's too much for congregations to hear. I don't know. But maybe I think sometimes congregations need to hear that. They need to have the hard, cold facts about the financial situations of camps. In all the years that I've been involved in camping and in a congregation, I've never been told that, you know, camps, I mean, I've been told from people I've worked with in the camping situation that, you know, they are in a sad situation, but I've never heard it told in congregations.
It seems like the way camping financially is, or it's you run into the black or the red, it's kind of a direct gauge on what's happening within congregations all across, you know, the range of their support. If those people are tightening up in the congregations, if economically we're in tough shape, the camping in the congregations will reflect that. Because most camps depend on at least from 30 to 50% of their funds on gifts. And you're constantly doing the kind of work that says, we need your gifts. And I know as a director, going to congregations and in a sense, hey, we're in crisis again. We're in crisis again. We need money now. We're going to go under. The more you do that, it's like crying wolf. You know, it feels uncomfortable. It's not planning very well. It doesn't make sense for a board of directors to hire a person to manage a camp who can't manage it. It's always in crisis. Depends on the time of the year.
At the same time, you have a lot of directors and camp directors and managers who are going into situations that are already sad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of a sudden somebody says, well, we want to hire this guy as our executive director because we think he can get us out of the red. You know, it's tough.
It is. I think there's a lot of things that are happening in camping now that's exciting. And that there's going to be some camps that are going to bite the dust. They're going to have to be sold. There's going to have to be reorganization. I think the ministry within camps, at least the camps that I've seen and visited and the directors that I know and the camps that I've been at, are doing a ministry that has affected my life personally. It's changed my life, turned it around. And I think it continues to do that. I think within camping you'll be seeing a lot of changes, as you will be seeing a lot of changes within the church too, I hope, as a reflection of what needs need to be met within congregations and within our country. Hopefully we'll go into a more world consciousness rather than a little community or America consciousness within camping and within congregations and the whole church. I hope that perhaps camping can in some ways lead the way in that. with some international kinds of experiences, with cross-cultural kinds of experiences, with exposing people to more than just, we go to camp, we had a good time, I got my first kiss. I mean that's valuable, but it's, you know, you can go other places to do that.
What can we, as Christian people, do to help encourage Christian camping? What would you set us as a valuable place to take home to our congregations to help encourage and nurture a Christian camp?
I would say get involved with the camp itself. Literature and a piece of information and even verbal kinds of things are very temporary that it's like listening to a newscast. What we need is relational kinds of things happening. If you're interested, if you have a burden for this, if you have a desire to get involved, then get involved physically and relationally with camps and what's going on.